It is good to be back on the mic. Mandalore the Esquire here, coming to you to finish, for once and for all, the Mortis Starkiller arc. I know it's been some time since I've put out my last episode, but, you know, holidays happen, and we're living in pretty hectic times, but I think now's a good time to return to normalcy, some semblance of normality. And in that spirit, we are going to be finishing the theory that put this podcast on the map so that we can begin entertaining other theories that have been percolating in light of recent events in Disney and Lucasfilm. So with that said, in that spirit, let us get on with Starkiller and how we can wedge him into the new canon. Let's dive right into it. So when The Force Awakens came out, a lot of people thought that Starkiller was not possible in the new canon, simply because J.J. Abrams had decided to name the third Death Star Starkiller Base. Starkiller Base. Out of all the things he could have named it, he decided to call it Starkiller. So a lot of people took that as a strike against Legends and a strike against a certain overpowered force user from the Legends continuity, Galen Merrick. I do not think that is a strike against him. If anything, it can be used as a strike as a opportunity. What this tells us is that the First Order could have been, the people who helped establish Starkiller Base, or given it its name, could have been inspired by Starkiller, by Galen Merrick, during his time as Darth Vader's apprentice or Inquisitor in the new canon. So, just we're going to get that issue right out of the way. As to how Galen Merrick, Starkiller, can how his existence in the new canon can be justified, is something we've been discussing over the last several episodes, ever since this podcast started. I think he can come in as a sort of quasi son figure to Anakin / Darth Vader, and a quasi brother figure to Ahsoka Tano. And I think he, in a way, also serves as a, kind of the avatar for the son. What we know from Legends is that, Starkiller, he wanted to kill Vader once it became clear that Vader was using Starkiller for his own machinations, which is to, better his position with the Emperor, to better the position of the Empire, so that there would be no threats coming from the remaining members of the Jedi Council and the Rebellion. If you'll recall, Starkiller, he made the Rebellion. He grouped together all of the factions that wanted to, oppose Emperor Palpatine's rule. And by gathering them together, Vader wanted to, take them all out in one fell swoop. So it's clear that that Vader had been wanting to, he'd been using the Sun. And the Sun, no, not his Sun, Starkiller, kind of jumping the gun there, but Vader was using Starkiller, and Starkiller in turn felt used, much like the father and the son respectively in the Mortis arc. But in the new canon, I think Galen can exist more or less the way he did in Legends. He can be found by Vader while he was a child, while Vader was enacting Order 66. He can, I think what absolutely must be addressed and changed in new canon if Starkiller is brought in is that he absolutely must be nerfed. The one drawback, at least in my mind, the massive drawback that Starkiller had, which was in many ways his ultimate pull, what made him so enticing to play and read about in Legends was how freaking powerful he was. He could use Jedi and Sith abilities together, you know, one after another in conjunction like absolutely nothing. And he made, once you got to the point in the story where Vader's plot armor started to thin out, he absolutely wrecks Darth Vader. Now, as cool as that is to play in a video game, if we're going to get Starkiller in a series or in a new game or in a movie, he absolutely cannot toss Vader around. He cannot, you know, in terms of power level, in terms of abilities, be up to par to Vader, because if the new canon has done anything absolutely right, it is making Darth Vader a scary, hulking, menacing badass. If you read the comics especially, no one messes with Vader. I believe in the first Marvel Star Wars crossover called Vader Down, Vader is shot down shortly after the events of A New Hope. His modified TIE fighter is shot down, and basically the entire Rebel Alliance is, you know, they're called in to finally apprehend the Emperor's right-hand man, to finally get him, imprison him, interrogate him, basically to take him out of the board. And easily over 100 or so Rebel commandos surround Vader's downed ship. Vader steps out, and they tell him to surrender, and that he's surrounded. And Vader ignites his saber, and he says, "All I am surrounded by is fear and dead men." Ooh, chills. And what he does, you think, okay, so this guy is surrounded on all sides by, you know, A280 blasters and Rebel commandos. There's no way he's going to deflect all those bullets at, all those blasters at once, right? I mean, they're going to pull an Order 66 on him. Wrong. He reaches out into the Force and ignites all of their thermal detonators, killing each and every single one of them. Like, you can't. This is a menace, just an absolute badass. Whereas in Legends, Vader was weak. Not emotionally speaking, because, I mean, we all know, you know, you still got Anakin in there, you know, who still weeps for Padme. But physically, he could be beaten. At one point, a clone of Darth Maul nearly bested him. And it was only because Vader was more angry than him and was willing to, hurt himself in the process of fighting this clone Maul, that he was able to get the upper hand against this clone version of Maul. Whereas in canon, no one has gotten close to injuring Emperor other than, Vader, other than, oh my God, other than the Emperor himself, really. In the latest run of the Darth Vader comics, where he goes to Mustafar to kind of, you know, rebuild himself, the Emperor just crushes all his limbs and, you know, puts him in a state of dying. But I don't think anyone else in current canon has ever put him to that point. So my point being, in the new canon, and I believe as it should be across all canons, Vader is an unstoppable menace who is powered by his fear, anger, and hatred. You know, he is the dark side incarnate at this point in time before the Return of the Jedi. So having Starkiller, you know, best him in a fight, it can't be done. It can't be done. But he absolutely should have enhanced powers, more so than that of your average Jedi or even the Inquisitorius. An idea I've been floating around on Reddit and, you know, among those who I love to talk Star Wars with, is I think Filoni was on the right track when it came to the introduction of Starkiller and the new canon. He wasn't on point, but he was very much on the right track. If you'll recall, I believe in our second the Ghost of Mortis, Mortis Theory arc episode, I mentioned how Filoni wanted to bring in Starkiller as an Inquisitor, as probably not the Grand Inquisitor, but as one of the head Inquisitors. But he decided not to do it because Starkiller would have to be nerfed into basically a point of non-recognition. I think what should happen and can happen but the opportunity is closing quickly, is that Starkiller should be the Inquisitor to end all Inquisitors. Starkiller should be Vader's, like, secret Inquisitor. His secret... you can even go as far as to say his secret apprentice. He was trained in secret to eliminate the Inquisitorious, the Inquisitors, once their utility had been, you know, fully realized. And the current canon, the Inquisitors have not reached a definitive endpoint. What I mean is, in Rebels, you have the Grand Inquisitor who dies, and you have all these other Inquisitors. In Fallen Order, you have the Second Sister and a bunch of other Inquisitors you don't see in the show. In the comics, you have a bunch of other Inquisitors, some of them mentioned but never seen, and some of them hinted at but never, you know, seen again. And yet, in A New Hope, we know for a fact, it's been stated, that the Inquisitorious are all dead. Or at least they're no longer in the picture. And given that all these Inquisitors are fallen Jedi and have, you know, talking from a meta context, they are not good people, there's just no way that their story, any of their stories, is going to end on a positive note. None of them. Even the Grand Inquisitor who, unveiled himself to Kanan Jarrus as being one of the former Jedi Temple Guards on Coruscant, his spirit, I believe, Vader preserved and is perpetually torturing. It's on a perpetual state of, like, being set on fire if the Star Wars comics, if I remember those correctly. I believe Luke encounters the visage of the ghost of the Grand Inquisitor, who was, like, constantly burning, even though he's in a spirit form. So, even the one who is most redeemable is not redeemed. He could not be redeemed. They're all gonna die, I am pretty darn sure. So, what I propose is, instead of having Starkiller go after, you know, a canon Rom Koda or a canon Shaak Ti, who's dead. She's died, like, four times across, like, the two canons. And the crazy, you know, ketamined out alien on Raxus Prime. Have him go after the Inquisitors. You know, have Vader, you know, train him still in secret for the apparent purpose of taking on the Emperor. And as part of his training, instead of taking out remaining members of the Jedi Council, have him take out the Inquisitors. You know? So that's going to necessitate Starkiller being stronger than the Inquisitors in terms of power, which they are all very strong. I mean, if you play Fallen Order and, you know, fought against the Second Sister in that game, you know they're all very well trained, personally trained by Vader himself. So what does it say when another, you know, servant of Vader bests all of his other already very competent servants? I respect the Inquisitors very much. I love their story. I love their look. I love their place in the new canon. And as paradoxical and as weird as it may sound, I love them so much that I would like for them to be taken out with a fan favorite Legends character that we all know and love. And that's Galen Merrick, the Starkiller. And again, this is going to play into the whole notion that Starkiller is being used, you know, to, you know, wipe some loose ends, that being the Inquisitors. But it also feeds into the fact that Starkiller himself is going to realize he's being used, much like the son to the father, and he's going to eventually go after Vader. So that fits. But also, what I love about this idea about, you know, Starkiller being the quasi-son to Anakin Vader and the quasi-brother to Ahsoka is, now that Ahsoka is in canon and she is the Padawan of Anakin, and it's clear that she is alive post-Rebels, and there's sort of an in-between between what happens in her depiction in Mandalorian and the end of Season 4 of Rebels, there's a whole area in the original trilogy where we do not know what Ahsoka Tano is doing. And what I would absolutely love to do, and what is still possible, but again, the window is closing, and I have to think that Dave Filoni is planning this, is have Ahsoka and Starkiller meet at some point. Maybe Vader is, after defeating Ahsoka on Malachor, he suspects that maybe he didn't get the job done. So he gets his hound, Starkiller, to go look for her. And the two, you know, have a discussion. At first, they fight, they tussle, they brawl as is necessary. But at some point, kind of like Rom Koda in the original Force Unleashed game, maybe Ahsoka can start talking sense to him. And at first, he'll resist, he'll fight it, he'll say it's blasphemy, he'll say she's lying. But, you know, after the fight, he'll take in the words to heart. And that's when he realizes he's being used by the Father. That is when he goes after Vader, his master, his supposed father figure. And honestly, that can make for such an interesting dynamic between the two if Starkiller should survive past A New Hope. Just imagine if Starkiller were to survive past the events of New Hope and, you know, just meet up with Ahsoka. It can be like a Wolverine, Sabretooth, Batman, Joker, you know, like two sides of the same coin kind of situation where you have two individuals, both of them, you know, they come up pretty much from the same same circumstances, that they were trained by the same individual, not persona, but the same individual. They both have they both use backhanded lightsabers, double wielded lightsabers. They are pretty gray in terms of their morality. Ahsoka starts off very, you know, light-sided, you know, very much like a paragon of the light side, whereas Starkiller starts as you know, the darkest of the dark, until they both of their moral compasses, not their moral compasses, but their compasses and the Force start tending towards the gray side of the Force. It's very interesting to see what could happen if the two were to ever cross or to meet. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Starkiller's inclusion in canon can also clear up a lot of, it could be used as an opportunity to clear up a lot of the unanswered questions, better yet, the questions that have been posed in light of the sequel trilogy, given, you know, that a lot of people didn't like those movies, and they don't like how, even though, you know, The Rise of Skywalker was supposed to be the finale of the saga in many ways, it posed more questions than it did answers. So, one idea I've been floating, and this is purely, you know, extra. This is beyond, you know, the scope of the theory, but, you know, it's, why not? It doesn't hurt to imagine in the galaxy far, far away. One of the things I've been floating is in The Force Unleashed 2, which is, story-wise, a bad game, graphically an amazing game, voice acting, superb, spectacular game. One of the interesting points of that story is that Starkiller, Gala Merrick, is cloned. Spoiler alert as to the canon ending of the original Force Unleashed, Gala Merrick dies. He confronts Vader, again, quasi-father figure, and the Emperor on the bridge of the Death Star 1. It is near completion. Starkiller fights his way through the Death Star, manages to destroy enough of it to halt progress on it up to the events leading up to A New Hope, and presumably Rogue One, if we were to, like, kind of mesh Legends and canon together. And on the throne room, Starkiller faces Vader, defeats him, and then faces Palpatine, puts him in a stalemate, such that his friends, allies, the members of the high-ranking members of the rebellion, they can escape from the Emperor's grasp, but he sacrifices himself in the process. Emperor Palpatine shocks him with lightning, and in pain, Gala Merrick absorbs the lightning and tries to refract it back at, you know, Palpatine, just enough so that, you know, his friends can get away. But obviously, Palpatine's Palpatine, no matter how buffed up Gala Merrick's power level is, no one other than Vader and Luke, and I guess Rey at this point, can defeat the Emperor, right? So Gala Merrick dies. However, Vader still has plans to use Starkiller to, you know, get at the Emperor. and to fulfill the Empire's needs. So what he does is he takes the corpse of Starkiller and has it cloned. And that in and of itself plays a very important role in the game. And what you learn is that the person you've been playing as, the Galen Merrick Starkiller you've been playing as throughout The Force Unleashed, you realize that's not the person you played as in the first game. That was a clone. And what makes that so fascinating, so weird, and what gives the twist its twistiness is that in both Legends and canon, the ability to clone a Jedi is supposed to be near impossible, extremely difficult. And even if it is possible, it is almost sacrilege to the Force. What I mean is the presence of, I'm going to say the M word, the M word of Star Wars that people do not like, but they're getting closer closer to liking it in light of The Mandalorian, since it was mentioned there. The midichlorians, that M word. The presence of the saturated presence of midichlorians in a Jedi is what makes the cloning process so difficult. So in both Legends and in canon, it's pretty much established that cloning a Force-sensitive being, someone with a high midichlorian count, is almost impossible. In Legends, it is very difficult. In canon, it's near impossible. Let me explain. In Legends, Galen Merrick was, I don't even think he was the first Jedi or Force-sensitive being to be cloned. In the original Battlefront 3, or what was supposed to be Battlefront 3, but was then transformed into the PSP exclusive title Battlefront Elite Squadron, you had this Jedi who I don't know if he willingly gave a blood sample or if it was taken to him if it was taken out of him after battle, but basically the Kaminoan cloners, they got a sample of a Jedi, a well-known Jedi's blood, and from that they managed to create two Force-sensitive clones, one of them X1 and X2, whose story we should definitely explore later. But basically, there's precedent, like it's happened. The Kaminoan cloners doing the Clone Wars have made clone Jedi. And then, of course, Vader, he secretly cloned Galen Merrick's corpse to create Starkiller 2.0 and Force Unleashed 2. In canon, you don't have that. It is pretty much established in the Clone Wars TV show and extra media and pretty much from The Rise of Skywalker that cloning Palpatine, that cloning a Force-sensitive person is supposed to be damn near possible. So impossible that it doesn't only include, call to question cloning sciences, but it must definitely involve, you know, Sith alchemy per the words of Charlie from Lost. I forgot that that man's name, but you know the one I'm talking about, the guy who just exists in The Rise of Skywalker and nowhere else in the sequel trilogy, the guy who supposedly can understand the Sith language. That individual, he made it clear that Palpatine returning doesn't only involve, you know, cloning technology, but it's got to involve something more. It's got to be Sith alchemy. So that just comes out of nowhere, right? And that is actually one of the things I did not like about the movie. Love the fact they brought back Palpatine. Love that he is the ultimate baddie of that trilogy and of the saga as a whole. But their ability to explain stuff is wanting. What I think poses an opportunity is, say, Galen Merrick in canon dies, again, either at the hands of the Emperor, or maybe Ahsoka strikes him down, or he dies, you know, giving his life for a canon Juno. If he dies, I can see an opportunity where the Emperor begins experimenting on Galen Merrick's corpse to, you know, clone a Force-sensitive being. You know, I can see how, you know, I'm pretty darn sure that Emperor Palpatine would not just, you know, willy-nilly, you know, go ahead and be the first Force-sensitive person to be cloned. I don't think he, being the Phantom Menace, the Phantom, you know, you know, instigator of the entire Star Wars, you know, saga, I'm pretty sure he would have a guinea pig, right? And I'm pretty sure he would want to make sure that the secret to death that he learned from Plagueis, he would want to experiment, much like Plagueis did in the novel of his namesake. Plagueis experimented on his first apprentice, or no, his own master's apprentice, Venomous. He put him in a state of death and then life and death, you know, perpetually, and then finally allowed him to die. I'm pretty sure Emperor Palpatine had a guinea pig. And what I propose is that, you know, once Galen Merrick fulfills his duty as the quasi-son to Vader and as the quasi, you know, brother to Ahsoka, that he can be the first guinea pig in many ways. That he can, that in trying to see the probability of him surviving the cloning process on Exegol, that he takes Galen Merrick's corpse and then tries to clone it. And from that, you have an answer, you know, how exactly does the cloning process work and why is it so impossible? And how did they get the process right? Sure, Palpatine didn't come out, you know, 100% A-OK on Exegol, but at least, you know, the Phantom Menace that Palpatine is, he had some assurance that, hey, this could work. If, say, for instance, my apprentice decides to become a father again to Luke Skywalker and throw me down a reactor shaft, how do I know this is going to work? And, again, this is just building up a justification for, you know, Starkiller's existence in canon. It's most certainly not something that's been hinted at. I do think there is some hinting that Filoni has, you know, had to try to make Starkiller canon. But not to this respect. This is just me talking, and this is me theorizing, as this show is made to do. But yeah, as you can tell, you know, Starkiller, you know, he fits pretty well in the groundwork that Filoni has established in the Mortis arc, and in many ways, he can be used to answer a lot of the, you know, answer a lot of the questions that have been left open posed by the sequel trilogy. So even if for some reason, you know, Starkiller is not on the books to return, then let this episode be a love letter to whoever's listening, to whoever may have sway in Lucasfilm and Disney, what have you, that Starkiller is a valuable institution to Star Wars and is very, it could be useful. He can serve the purposes of satisfying, you know, the fans of old, of Legends, but also, you know, satisfying the holes, the plot holes, the missing pieces, if you will, made by, you know, the introduction of the new canon material. Real quick, just another idea that I've seen floated around and that I've perpetuated in Reddit is the whole idea of Vader having a secret apprentice, you know, a secret inquisitor. The fact that Emperor Palpatine is aware of that, the fact that he learns that, you know, Vader has his own apprentice, that in and of itself may necessitate the Emperor to get his own secret apprentice of himself. And who better to be the Emperor's secret apprentice, you know, besides Vader? You know, Mara Jade. And that is a story for another time. But I'm telling you guys, Starkiller in canon, if you were to nerf him, obviously, if you were to nerf him, respect Darth Vader, respect his invincibility, but also respect, you know, Starkiller himself, respect his, you know, importance to, you know, those who entered the Legends continuity or exist or enjoy the Legends continuity in its final years, those who enjoyed Starkiller. If you add him into canon, he can do so much wonder. He can do so much good. He can answer a lot of, he can be the answer to a lot of questions posed. And like I just did right now, he in of itself can raise more questions with satisfactory answers. Hopefully one of them is Mara Jade, but again, we will dedicate future episodes and such to those theories and to Mara Jade especially, because she is very, very interesting. Definitely a character who equally, if not more so, than Starkiller, probably more so, deserves to be brought in the new canon. I actually do have some theories as to how and when it can be done. But with that said, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for finally listening to the end of this arc. And I hope to see you very soon. Happy holidays. May the Force be with you. Stay safe. And goodbye. Thank you for listening to the episode. This is a sort of epilogue that I decided to do after the fact, just in the spirit of the holidays and just looking back and thinking where this podcast began, and even more than that, just in the spirit of being, you know, thankful for what you have in light of recent events and recent social political climate. It's just good to, you know, sit back and, you know, just give thanks. So with that said, I would just like to thank you to all my listeners, those who have been there at the beginning, and those who have come to check out the channel. I am happy you're here. I hope you like the content. I'm going to be putting out more stuff, hopefully more frequently now that things have kind of settled down, at least in my end. I'd like to give thanks to my friends, my family for, you know, for being there, for... making these times, more fun, easier, and just for, you know, reminding me, as I hope your friends and your loved ones remind you, that there are people there who care for you, and they want you to be well, and they want nothing but the best for you. And lastly, I'd just like to give a special thanks to my now fiance. I love you. And I could not have made this podcast without you. You make me happy, make me comfortable. You make me excited to be a Star Wars fan. You make me excited to speak my voice, to, you know, get my thoughts out there, to, you know, not be afraid to try new things. And that culminated in making this. So on the air... here forever memorialized, I want you to know, Amor, thank you, and I appreciate everything you do, and I love you. All right, thank you.